Next item on the agenda is submerged aquatic vegetation status report. Dr. Bob Orth of VIMS. Good afternoon, sir.
Sorry. Okay. Okay, here's the lineup for this afternoon, and I will do my best to keep this brief, given the length of the meeting already. As I prepared this talk, I felt there was an item that I really had neglected to let you know on some things of why I get up here and speak so passionately about this particular topic. And so I've added just one additional item I want to review for you today, just once, some of the important things that have been dealt with by the Chesapeake Bay program that dealt with submerged aquatic vegetation or seagrass, which is item number one, a brief review of some of the policies that deal with SAV. This is all policies and agreements that have been done by the Chesapeake Bay program and approved by the Chesapeake Executive Council, which are the governors of the states of Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania, and some other officials. But these are the governors that sign off on these things. They have to read these things. They have their staff. And so I wanted to highlight some of these that really deal with this, and again, why I'm up here and why I speak so passionately about this particular topic. These are the policies for conservation and restoration of SAV. In 1989, the governors approved a management policy that said, let's get more SAV back because it was at historically low levels never seen before in recorded history of the Bay. The Bay Agreement in 1992 used SAV as an initial measure of progress in restoring living resources and water quality. This was a Bay Agreement. The 1993 Bay Agreement agreed to restore SAV to historic levels and a goal of 114,000 acres, a very important step because now we haven't had a number to deal with. In 1997, and John just stepped out, he was involved in this, they approved the Blue Crab Fisheries Management Plan. It was the first plan that linked fisheries management to both water and habitat quality, which included SAV. The gentleman talked about water quality. Here it is. It was in the Blue Crab Management Plan in 1997. The 2000 Bay Agreement called for developing specific plans to protect and restore SAV. The 2002 Bay Agreement set a new goal of 186,000 acres, and the reason why that's a little bit higher is that they used a different formula that used historic levels, which you're going to hear about in subsequent meetings dealing with aquaculture. And last but not least, in 2003, they approved the strategy for the protection and restoration of SAV. It's a lengthy document. I don't want to go into it, but here are all these documents talking about restoring and protecting SAV. They're out there. I've worked with every one of these documents, and the people, they're important, and they highlight why SAV is important in the Bay. Last but not least is this document. Gentlemen, this is the Virginia Water Quality Standards. In this document, in 2007, they included SAV acreage targets in terms of water clarity and specific target acreages for every single segment for the Bay. Virginia is one of the few states in the nation that includes water clarity and probably the only state other than Maryland now that includes specific targets for the attainment of water clarity. This is the Virginia Water Quality Standards. And so basically every acre in these segments now count, and we are well below those target levels in many of these areas. Okay, as you know, VMYC has worked with VIMS and approving some regulations, one of which was the aquaculture regulation, which you've heard about in the past, that said no new leases on existing SAV, approved in 98. And then we had the Chincoteague Bay SAV Sanctuary. Mr. Bowden was heavily involved in working up a compromise dealing with that development of a sanctuary that had initially first a buffer around SAV, and then because that didn't quite work because the areas weren't marked, we now marked that sanctuary. And now leading into my second part, which is the dredging issues we had in the Chincoteague Sanctuary. These are circular scars. This is an aerial photograph taken from our mapping program. These were scars, again, just to set the stage, anywhere from 100 to 300 feet in diameter. These were caused by the clam dredgers moving in a circle. Again, we worked with you guys and the staff to create the sanctuary, initially just a buffer. Then we added these big signs, which helped very much in that sanctuary. Here are the numbers before the sanctuary established, after the sanctuary was established but not marked, and then when we marked it. Very effective once that area was marked. And between 2001 and 2006, we basically saw no scars. Unfortunately, in 2007, we did find 5 new scars, meaning that someone has gotten in onto the radar, not detected by your enforcement, and they've done a wonderful job, obviously, in these years controlling that, but we have seen 5 new scars that appeared in one very small area near Chincoteague Island. They're there. So we just need to, again, work with your enforcement and let them know someone snuck in. Okay, one of the problems that we need to resolve with your staff is these big marker poles are now gone. The ICE has taken them out. They're very expensive. We've done it twice. This cost us $10,000 in grants to do that. What I would like to suggest, and I've worked with the BMRC staff, of putting maybe large white poles that can be put in right around December 1st. It doesn't take that much effort, and just have them marked during the dredge season, which is December 1st through March 15th. And that will have to be an action item that needs to be dealt with because it's a regulation. And the regulation has these markers, 5 specific poles. The rest are these marker poles here, so we must do something about that, and I think hopefully that could be dealt with a simple change in the regulation. I brought this up regarding the grass beds in Chincoteague. Here are the numbers of SAV acres in hectares, but just look at the trends. Our big concern is what's happened to Chincoteague in the last few years. The levels of SAV in Chincoteague has nosedived and is now at levels almost at which we started monitoring in 84. Water quality in Chincoteague is a big issue and is not getting any better. And both Maryland in particular is dealing with it because most of Chincoteague is in this area. But this is a big problem. These beds, a lot of the beds that were there when we were working with the advisory staff are gone. And the waters are just nasty up there in some places. Again, a concern which I'll highlight at the end in my talk. The Propellis Garden Project, which you all fund every year, again, highlighting that there were a lot of scars created by hall setting, which we knew was the cause of it. In the seagrass beds, most of the intensive scarring occurred in the Mobjack Bay and the Pocosin Flats and some areas up here in the Tangier area. We worked with you all to develop a program to highlight following scars in the Browns Bay area at the mouth of the York River, the Guinea Marsh area, and the Pocosin River area. This is a composite. Again, I showed this to you last year. This is an aerial photograph showing all the scars up to 2001 just to show you where they occurred. And we've been monitoring every single scar every single year, what happens to it. Here are the data that we collect every year from those aerial photographs just to highlight again. Take a year, the first year we started, 1989, we followed every single scar through when you couldn't see it anymore, meaning recovery. And as we said before, these scars do recover fairly quickly, even when there were a lot of them. So you can see the high level of scars in these 2 points, how quickly the next year we just didn't see them. These beds do recover. When water quality is not a problem, these beds can recover from perturbations very quickly. And as you can see, in the latter years, the amount of scarring that we have seen has been minimal. There still is some, but it's nothing like what we saw in the previous years. And we had obviously worked with your staff to develop some compromises with the hall standards. And so we feel that that has been an effective strategy. And I do work with one of the hall standards. He calls me up every year and says, how are things going? What's going on? So that's Pocosin Flats. Here again is the Browns Bay, Guinea Marsh area, Guinea Marsh going into the Severn. This is Browns Bay, all the grass beds, all the color lines are where the scars occurred. Again, we're following all those scars. Here are the data. The high point was when there was a lot of scarring in the 90s. Again, as you can see from this point, 100,000 meters dropped off very quickly the next year. Again, they recovered. These beds grow fast. Again, water quality is not compromised, and there's grass there, they can recover. And in the subsequent years from 2000 to 2007, we don't see as many scars. They're there, again, here and there, but in some of the places where we've been working, we don't see them hauling anymore. They do haul in the Severn and off Guinea. But again, the amount of scarring has really been minimized in these recent years. So I think this monitoring is our eye in the sky. We're watching very carefully. Some of it could be due to that. Some of the hauling may be also reduced in years. I don't follow that. Maybe Jack has data on some of the some of the haul staining efforts. So that's brown bit. That's the scarring. I want to bring you up to date on our seagrass restoration effort in the coastal lagoons because you've given us set-asides, and those are valuable bottoms to a lot of people, and so I want to keep you abreast of what's going on. As you know, there were no seagrasses from 1933 when they were wiped out, and also when the scallop fishery basically went from very robust to nothing. We initiated a restoration program in 1997. We started in South Bay, where we now have a set-aside given to us by you, Kaba Bay, Spider Crab Bay, Hog Island Bay, and we have the set-aside also, again, given to us by you. The quick timeline, we did stuff in 97 through 2007 that said, hey, grass is going to grow. This was when we got the first set-aside from you in 2001 for 5 years. Did a lot of work between 2001 and 2006 at all these different bays. 2006 is when we had the set-aside renewed with an additional acreage totaling 728, and we also have now the new set-aside in Hog Island Bay. The grass beds in all these places are doing very well. 2007, we planted more acres, beds are spreading naturally. 2008, we're going to continue planting. 2009 is going to be a really interesting year because right now we're talking about not just the additional planting, but beginning the initiation of a possible reintroduction of bay scallop to these coastal bays. Low level, start low, small. We're now pursuing grant money with the possibility that we might reintroduce the scallop to sustainable populations. I had a meeting with Mark and looking back from BIMS, Watch Creek, Barry Truitt from the Nature Conservancy, and certainly we'll be working with VMRC. If this is to be a reality, it's going to take a lot of people with a lot of effort and a lot of some money. So that's that. Here's the timeline of the numbers of acres that we've seeded through 2007, roughly 190 acres that we've actually seeded with eelgrass seeds that we've collected mostly from the Chesapeake Bay. South Bay, again, an aerial photograph looking at Wreck Island, the area behind Wreck Island. This is the set-aside. These all dark little spots in 2004 are the acres that we planted. This is 2007. I showed you this before. The bed has been spreading like wildfire. And this is 2007. 2008, which we don't have good photographs yet, this is one big, large, continuous bed. The entire 728-acre set-aside is pretty much covered with grass. It's truly remarkable how quickly, when water quality is not an issue, how fast these plants grow. It's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Okay, some graphics here in terms of 98 through 2007. The number of acres that we planted using 23 million seeds that we've collected mostly from Chesapeake Bay. This is what's been happening when you look at the total amount of bottom area covered in the coastal bays. We now have almost 1,400 acres of eelgrass in these four coastal bays that we've mapped. That's just spreading naturally. These things are going wild. And this other magenta curve is if you take all that grass and kind of put it into a dense area, there's almost 500 acres of solid eelgrass out there right now. Most of it in South Bay, but Cobb is coming along really well. Spider Crab is not doing as well because we haven't got as much. And Hog Island Bay is just doing exactly what South Bay did. So we're really excited about its recovery. And I think there are going to be a lot of other benefits to the ecosystem, not just in terms of our hope to get the scallop back. And this little feature up here is where all the grasses are in South Bay, and the densities are in different colors. Green is dense, yellow is patchy. But you can see how far that bed, with all these little dots that we started in 2001, has spread all the way south into the areas below this area. We had a great effort in 2008 of using volunteers to help us collect. This is South Bay, and can you just turn that light off, and you can see, because it's really kind of cool. This is low tide. Anybody turn that light off quickly?
Yes.
Yeah. If you look right here, this is all solid eelgrass. This is South Bay, and you can see from here as far off in the horizon is one big, solid, dense bed. And we used, for 3 weeks, 50, 60 volunteers from all different state agencies. And people came from as far away as South Boston. I mean, we couldn't believe how many people showed up to help us collect reproductive shoots in 2008, and it was a marvelous effort. Again, you can see how dense this bed is. When we started, there was not a blade of grass in South Bay, and this stuff has just gone bonkers. So in 2008, using all the volunteers and some of my staff, and we had some VMRC staff come out and some reporters who helped out, collecting 3.4 million seeds. Now, this is just from South Bay. So think about it. We went to Chesapeake Bay. Now we're collecting seeds from South Bay for the first time. It's really kind of neat to think that we're now using the seeds that weren't there, now are there, to help with the restoration effort. Okay, enough said about the great things. This is the nasty thing, the sad thing that's happening in Chesapeake Bay with regard to eelgrass. And I think I, again, highlighted this year. I'm going to highlight it every year until things turn around. And it's really sad. But remembering this slide, this is the bay-wide distribution of eelgrass in the late 50s and 60s. It covered over half the bay, eelgrass. This is just one species that covered the bay. By the late 70s, due to Agnes, this is where eelgrass occurred. We lost, by 1972, over half the area that had eelgrass was gone. Places like the Potomac, the Rappahannock, and the Pantanc lost almost all of their eelgrass. And that has not returned despite repeated efforts to try to transplant it. So unlike in the coastal bays, everything that we've done here is not doing too well. And here's what's happening from 84 through 2006. I showed you this last year. Although we were quite excited until the mid-90s, this is what's been happening with eelgrass since the mid-90s to 2006. And here's what's happening with water clarity. We're just losing life. And that is not going to be easy to recover. And if we're hoping to make some kind of difference, and because this is a big issue coming up in terms of our blue crab thing, you know, if we want to get these grass beds back and let them return naturally the way we're seeing the coastal bays, this is going to have to change. We're not going to be able to meet any of those targets in the water quality standards unless we really reverse this long-term change in water clarity. And there are the coastal bays, different scale. This is in hectares, 2.5 acres in a hectare, but you can see we went from a high of 12,000 down to 6,000 hectares. But look at the coastal bays. So the coastal bays are telling us if water quality is not an issue, these grass beds can rebound naturally, and you don't need a lot of startup stuff. I mean, this stuff, once we got everything going, is just going bonkers. So the sad part about Chesapeake Bay, and of course the same thing is happening in Chincoteague, we're losing the grasses because we're losing the light. The coastal bays in the Virginia portion are doing very well because light and water temperature are actually quite different. So we're doing quite well there. Anyway, that's what's going on with the eelgrass status. So quick summary, as I said, and you all know it's a valued resource. It comes up over and over with the blue crab issues. It's highlighted over and over in these standards and agreements and policies that I just highlighted very briefly. The Chincoteague Bay Sanctuary, I think we just need to get new markers. I think that's going to be something we have to work on. And just to let you know, Maryland had the same issue back in the late 90s where they had hydraulic clam dredging in grass beds. They passed lots of laws and regulations that protected the grass beds. Effective 2008, the hydraulic clam dredging in the coastal bays in Maryland is banned. No more. They're not going to allow it anymore. Propeller scarring, low levels, but I think our monitoring is keeping things in check. I'd like to think that you'll allow us to continue that, and as well as monitoring the stuff in the Chincoteague Bay. The coastal bays, it's doing fabulous so far. You know, we are watching things carefully, you know, with global climate change and things getting warmer. Because the eelgrass is at its southern limit of its distribution, we are concerned that, if anything, we could lose more and more eelgrass in the bay. The thing that's saving the coastal bays is you get that influx of good ocean water regularly twice a day. I think that's keeping things pretty cool for eelgrass there. Chesapeake and Chincoteague Bay, we're in a crisis mode, and I'm going to say it over and over. You guys need to really keep your fingers on what's going on here, because this is a concern, and eelgrass is retreating from deep to shallow, from upriver to downriver, and efforts that we've had for 20 years to restore areas in Rappahannock and Piankatank just isn't going anywhere. And that's it, gentlemen. I'll answer any questions that you have of me. And I ran through a lot. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot here. We work closely with your staff. They're great. And I really enjoy that relationship. I hope that continues. And, you know, like I said, the situation in the Bay is really serious. It's great to have the coastal bays as a great way to point out what happens when you don't have the issues of water clarity. And, you know, that's it.
Good deal. Any questions for Dr. Orth? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for a very informative presentation, Dr. Orth. Just one quick question. on water clarity. Your data showed a significant decline in that. What do you attribute that to primarily?
This is really unbelievable. We were looking at the data. It looks like there's a slow increase in the chlorophyll in the water, which means phytoplankton needing nutrients. You don't see it in the big signal of total suspended solids, but it's not clear cut. There are a lot of other things going on, and when we brought this graphic up, and this is all from Bay Program Water Quality Monitoring, the MASEB, in areas in Virginia, people were like, holy Christmas, this can't be happening. We've lost half a meter. Up to a meter of clarity in some of these places, and a lot of the beds that are in deeper water are just gone. So this is an issue that is really now becoming into the spotlight, throughout the bay, because the bay is getting dirtier.
Further questions? Again, I echo Mr. Robbins' sentiments. Very, very good report, and we really appreciate you keeping us informed on this very important subject.
Okay.
And I can assure you we'll continue to work well together on this matter.
No worries.
Matter of mutual interest. Thank you very much, Bob.
And Jack.
Mr. Chairman,
yes?
This is the meeting where you traditionally approve $20,000 in funding to continue Dr. Roy's work, the monitoring that's so important to this.
Where's the lady with the money? Do we have the $20,000?
We have the $20,000. We traditionally take $10,000 from the commercial fund, $10,000 from the recreational fund.
Matters before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move to adopt staff's recommendation for funding.
Second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? Dr. McConaughey.
I just say he's doing a great job, and we're getting a bargain.
Good deal.
I enjoy coming out and talking. It's fun. But I enjoy it, but I am very concerned, and for this gentleman here, this is an issue that I'm hoping you guys get your teeth into.
Yeah.
Because you've got
the stuff for standards. You ready for me to vote on it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Next item.